The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 18. Luck Runs Out.
Golden Spiral Media presents The Walking Dead Talk Through. The Walking Dead Talk Through is a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the action, peril, and drama that are unleashed as Rick Grimes, Daryl Dixon, and the rest of the group fight to survive. Send in your thoughts about each episode at 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Hey, survivors, welcome back to another episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Brian.
And we are here to talk about the season 5 finale, the 90-minute finale titled Conquer. And it was written by Scott M. Gimple and Seth Hoffman and directed by Greg Nicotero, who has become quite a prolific Walking Dead director.
Yeah, it's interesting. Scott M. Gimple and Seth Hoffman, I don't know if they've ever teamed up to write a Walking Dead episode, but they have teamed up to write a Ghost Rider sequel.
Really?
Yeah, I'd have to look up the title, but they wrote the sequel to the original Ghost Rider. So let's take a look at ratings and news.
Okay.
So we do have some this week. Of course, we always have ratings. And The Walking Dead had very good ratings for its finale, an 8.2 in the 18 to 49 with 15.784 million. And that makes it the highest rated season finale of the series. Huh. It is not as high as the season premiere or the season 4. I think the season 4 premiere had the same demographic, but the didn't have as many millions. But anyway, it's the highest. It beat the last year's, which had a 7.6. Beat the total, I think, by 3% or something like that. So anyway, pretty good. And Talking Dead afterwards got a really good rating for a show that talks about another show.
Yeah. it's pretty good, usually, I find.
It is. But it got a 3.9 in the 18 to 49 with 7.525 million. And, that's good enough to beat a lot of the broadcast network episodes out there. So it's pretty outstanding, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the news, any fans out there, unless they've been living under a rock, they have probably heard that the official title to the spinoff or companion series or whatever you call it has been announced, was announced by Robert Kirkman on Twitter this past Friday. And we had reported the title several episodes back. It was rumored, and that's been confirmed. It is called Fear the Walking Dead. And there was a little trailer or teaser, very short. It was on during Talking Dead, and it's available on YouTube, and we have a link to it in the show notes. So if you want to see it and you haven't seen it yet, check it out. But the main thing that is evident, I mean, you don't see any of the stars or anything like that, but it is pretty obvious that it will take us back to the start of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, and as previously mentioned, we'll make some kind of determination as far as us or Golden Spiral Media covering the show at a later date. So, yeah, we're dragging our heels. What can I say? The other thing, George R.R. Martin, who is, of course, the writer of the Game of Thrones books, he gave an interview to Entertainment Weekly, and his belief on how to survive the universe of The Walking Dead, if you're in England, is to use the castles. And he basically talks about that in the article, but essentially he's saying, you know, fortify the walls and build on the moats and the various, you know, defenses that the castles had. And that would be a superior place to hold up for the zombie apocalypse. I tend to agree, but that doesn't help us much in North America or most of the world.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I was thinking the same thing. That's obviously a good idea because they were fortified strongholds back in the way back for a reason. And the only problem is they're hard to build. They take a long time and manpower. And I don't think that anybody has that much time to do that right now. If there were existing castles over here, then maybe. But we kind of our little country here was sort of developed post castle. So
post castle,
yes. And I'm not talking about Rick Castle.
Yeah, I mean isolated high rises. You know, kind of could serve the same.
Yeah, maybe, but they're not. Yeah. I mean, they're not. They're just not the same because, I mean, most
they don't have trebuchets.
Yeah, they don't have trebuchets and they don't have moats. Those would be easy enough to build, though. But I mean, they're most high rises are, I think, steel and glass. Steel good, glass not, I think. So I don't know. I'm sure that there are modern equivalents out there, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. So there you go.
Okay. So, Ruthie,
yes.
What did you think of Conquer?
I really liked it. I think it conquered. Or, you know, something like that.
Like someone who owns a castle?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Well, I really liked it a lot. And I was looking back at my ratings for the whole season, and either I was too hard on some of the earlier episodes of the season, or they really just weren't as good as most of the episodes in the back half. And I'm going to go with the latter because I really liked most of the episodes in the back half of the season. They were pretty good. I think they kind of, most of them hit the mark pretty well. And for this one, I also liked it a lot. And so I gave it 9.5 dropped casseroles.
It's very funny. Or uncanny. Because I did something identical to you, I guess. Because I had an issue trying to figure out what to rate this. And strangely, my first impression of where it sat ended up being exactly what I ended up rating it. But before I give my rating, I will just say that in looking at you mentioned you were going to change some of your ratings, so
maybe
I don't know how that's going to fit in, but in looking at the ratings for this year, I had said that I couldn't believe how many episodes were in the nines. And it turns out after this episode, 11 episodes out of 16, which is just incredible, amazing, rated a 9 or better. And I mean, this was a really good episode, but it ranks 5th on the season's ratings. I gave it a 9.4. And because of something we'll talk about later, I called it 9.4 out of 10 Books of Eli. And for those of you who don't get that reference, we'll talk about that later. But it is amazing. I looked at the ratings again, and one of my favorite scenes that has ever been in The Walking Dead was the scene in the church when Gareth and his group feel the wrath of the our group. And that got a 9.5, and that was 4th out of 16. One of my favorite scenes. And of course, my favorite this season was No Sanctuary. I rated Spend. I actually brought that up to a 9.75. But anyway, enough about that. I was just amazed. 11 out of 16 episodes were 9 or better. And when I was looking at yours, and this is without knowing how you were going to change them, you also were going to have 11 out of 16. So is that still accurate?
Probably. I mean, if I were to change them, I wouldn't do it this instant. I would probably just do it like later.
Yeah.
Sometime later.
But anyway, now this is a 9.4, but it's also worth saying that it is probably my third favorite season finale. I think my favorite season finale was last season, which is probably in the top 5 episodes of the show, and Beside the Dying Fire is probably slightly higher than this. So, you know, a 9.4, and it's still the third best.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
We also got another rating.
Yes. Sarah, we will play her audio feedback in a little while, so you'll hear it from her own mouth, but we're going to go ahead and say it now with the rest of our ratings. Sarah gives it a 9.5 swords off the wall.
Yeah.
So.
And.
Big hit.
Yeah. So. All right.
Okay.
So.
So, let's do
it is time for. Awesome sauce. Awesome. Okay.
Yes.
What'd you think was awesome?
Awesome sauce. Morgan.
Besides me saying awesome sauce.
Yes.
What else did you think was awesome?
That was definitely awesome sauce. Morgan, being the cold open was probably the most awesome sauce cold open I think I've ever seen ever. I mean, when, you know, it was fade to black right before the show, and then the lights came on, so to speak, and it was Morgan, and I just was like, squee!
Yeah, and I alluded to this in I guess segue into mine, which was also dealing with Morgan, and it was when Morgan saved Daryl and Arid at the, what was that, was it a food processing or a canning plant?
I was thinking it was a cannery.
Yeah. So, I thought that was awesome as well. And if you haven't seen, Denzel Washington played Eli in the Book of Eli. Other than one, you've seen that movie, haven't you?
Yes.
Yes. And other than one particular characteristic about Eli, which I'm not going to reveal if you haven't seen the movie.
I know what you're talking about.
They were very alike, and I love that movie. I don't know what kind of reception it got, but I love that. What can I say? It was apocalyptical. I love anything apocalyptical. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I like the post-apocalypse stuff, dystopic future stuff, all that stuff.
Okay, so we are both Morgan lovers.
Yes.
So That is for sure. So what else do you have?
My That whole little scene when Abraham is at the door and he's got flowers and he sees Eugene sitting there and he's like, oh, come back. And Rosita's like, oh, he's asleep. Just, you know, come in. And then he's trying to, I mean, you can tell he is clearly trying to make as little noise as possible. And there she is in the background. And she's just like, boop, and pushes that pan off the edge of the counter and was like, oops. Just, I thought that was absolute classic comedy timing stuff. And then Abraham looks at her and looks back and there's Eugene staring at him. That whole scene, I was just like, the whole scene is just awesome. Just like the cold open was awesome. That whole scene, I was just like, man, this is awesome. Love it.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, I have definitely grown to appreciate Josh McDermott and the character of Eugene. I just loved that deadpan kind of expression on his face.
Yes. I'm going to elaborate on that right now.
He sells that character so well. I mean, it just, I totally buy him now as Eugene. And, you know, I think back around self-help, I did not like Eugene, but I am definitely, he's definitely grown on me as the season's gone on.
Yeah, I agree. He is totally growing on me as well. I think when I was watching that scene in my notes, I basically said, you know, it's really hard to dislike Eugene, honestly. Like, if I'm being totally honest with myself, it's hard not to like him because he's just so, I don't know, perfunct, I guess, and kind of matter of fact and just, you know, I don't know. He's fun. I like him, I think.
Okay, well, I have actually two more. Do you have any more beyond what you had?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure there were other things, but.
Well, I think you're going to like what I have for my awesome sauces or additional sauces of awesome, because they involve one of your favorite characters, Carol. So my first thing has to do with Carol. And first of all, her covering up that whole, you know, thing that she, you know, did going to the armory and completely saying, you know,
yeah,
why did you do that?
Why'd you do that, Rick?
Yeah. And then, a bit later, you know, shortly after that, I guess, when, she's talking to, Rick and she says, you know, I wish I had that, a quote, and it would fit for the lines of the week, but it was that whole, you know, sunshine, it doesn't work that way or something.
She said, she said, you want to take over and not lie. It doesn't work that way, sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. And the last thing, and how could we not say that this was awesome, but Carol's, threatening of douche doctor.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Porch dick, you mean?
Pete, the now deceased Dr. Pete.
Yes, now defunct.
Yes, that was great. I love that.
Yeah, I was wondering to myself, honestly. Well, I wasn't really wondering, to be honest. I know pretty much the answer, but as I'm watching that scene, I'm thinking, I wonder why Carol doesn't just off Pete, but I think it's because she's not really as heartless as people think. She's very calculating, and she knows when to take risks and when to do this, that, or the other. You know, she's a very good strategist, I think, and so she doesn't just kill him, even though she says no one would think otherwise that she wasn't acting in self-defense, basically. And he seems rather cowed, but I was actually a little worried that he was going to try and do something when she turned her back, you know? I don't know. But anyway, I was just thinking, I don't know why she doesn't just take care of him, but...
Finish him!
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's I think it's because she is not really that... She's not as cold, I guess, as everyone is making her out to be, I think. Because, after all, when it came right down to it, you know, I mean, I can't remember, I probably said this last week. Sam was hiding behind Carol, not his mom. So she really, even though she threatened him to within an inch of his life, he still was running to her for help and protection, I think, recognizing that she is that person that will protect him no matter what, because she does what is necessary. And I guess in that moment, it wasn't necessary for her to kill Pete. That's what I think.
Well, I had another take on it. I think part of it, a big part of it, had to do with the fact that he's a doctor and he is still taking care of Tara. And she brings up the fact that you need to go look in on Tara.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that didn't exist or what have you, she very well could have done it. But yeah, I think that she is cold, but she's also calculating. And
she's very utilitarian.
Yes. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, yeah, and in that vein, you don't throw away a tool as long as it's still useful. So I guess, yeah, you're right. I would say that makes sense, that she doesn't want to discard that tool just yet. But when that tool stops saving and starts killing, it's time to put the rabid dog down.
Well, in the case of Pete, his fate was in his own hands.
Yeah.
Literally, he could have just minded his own business, accepted, you know, the way things were.
Not been an ass, basically.
Yes. And nothing would have happened to him.
Yeah.
But he did what he did, and the rest is history. So.
Yes, the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. So.
Agreed.
I guess that's it for awesome sauce. Now for lines of the week. So, I do not have it. And we've tried to not be explicit in this podcast, even though sometimes The Walking Dead and every other Walking Dead podcast is pretty much explicit. We've tried not to be. But I guess we would have to remove the, or should I say, put on the explicit sign if we recited Abraham's speech at the little forum talking about Rick. But I love that speech.
Yeah.
But Abraham has a unique way of speaking.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
It always makes me laugh. And he also said something, you know, that whole, we mentioned it before about the Eugene Abraham interaction there, that whole thing where he says, I nearly killed you. I mean, that wasn't a real great line, but the line back from Eugene where he says, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
It just, that wasn't, I guess that's another line of the week, but it involved Abraham. So do you have any other lines of the week?
Not really. I guess I would say Rick's speech at the end, because his speech at the end is where he, okay, so I liked it. Again, thought it was good. But again, it's kind of It's the delivery again. Once again, his face is covered in blood. I understand that this time it's because he was, you know, off killing walkers, but his face is covered in blood. Even so, even though he's talking sense, it's the packaging that's not very good. But we did grab our title from his speech, and that is that luck runs out. And I mean, he's had a lot of good lines. He didn't say that he didn't say this week, but his, if you don't fight, you die, you know, all that kind of stuff, all very good lines, but still sometimes it's the packaging that counts as well.
Yeah. Rick had a bloody face yet again, but the difference between this week and last week is he had much better punctuation this time, and his punctuation was a dead walker. I think
instead of a waving handgun.
Well, I think what he had to say wouldn't have been as effective, you know, because it was implied that he was going to come to this forum and say a lot of the things that he was going to say, but without a walker. Of course.
Right.
And I don't think it would have been as effective without a demonstration.
Yeah.
And of course, now he has a demonstration. I'll talk a little bit about that demonstration in a minute, but it helped make what he was saying a lot more effective. And so now let's go into our more detailed analysis, although we've been pretty detailed already. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to start with saying that those people of Alexandria and our group that we have called various things that we have wanted dead, or that are we've called dicks or whatever, they didn't disappoint with their dickiness. Nicholas?
Yeah.
Obviously going after Glenn and trying to kill him and almost succeeding.
Exactly like you said he would do.
Yes. Yeah, it makes you think did I have access to the scripts, but obviously it was one thing that I predicted that didn't happen, which I'll get to.
Yeah, but a lot of other things did.
Yes, but a lot of other things did. So yeah, Nicholas went after Glenn. And he ended up crying like a little baby.
Yeah, I imagine him wetting himself in that scene.
Yeah. What'd you think about the fact that Glenn could have killed him?
Yeah.
And for that matter, Glenn could have killed him now twice.
Yes.
Yet, he didn't kill him again. I think this show had a lot of acts of mercy in it. And Glenn was... this was one of the examples of giving mercy, and he gave mercy to Nicholas. I mean, he could have killed him, and in many ways that would have been a mercy kill, but that was, he spared his life. So, and I think Nicholas won't be as much of a dick, at least with Glenn.
You think again. So?
Yeah, I do.
See, I'm wondering, is he the kind of person that will... To me, the personality that they have set up so far is one that I think that Nicholas is the self-preservation type, in that Glenn knows his secret. Glenn told him that he knows his secret. So I think in order to protect himself and his secret, that's why he was trying to kill Glenn. So my question is really, is he going to take the second chance, or will he try to kill Glenn again? Because now Glenn has seen him humiliated and crying like a little bitch baby. So, I know.
Help me.
But yeah, so I don't know. I would like to think that he will be a better man and take the second chance. That basically the second chance that all of our gang is trying to offer the Alexandrians, kind of, you know, that whole... interaction, I guess, between Nicholas and Glenn is kind of a microcosm of the whole situation, I think, or a small representation or representation on a smaller scale of the whole thing, because they're trying to show them, look, you guys don't know what you're doing. You are like children, and you have to, you know, you're not ready, but you have to be, and you have to do it now. It's like when kids are thrust into the grown-up world, they're not ready, but they have to grow up really fast. That's kind of what has to happen to the Alexandrians. So I don't know if Glenn or if Nicholas is going to accept that chance, or if he's going to be even more resentful. I'm really hoping it's option A.
Yeah. You're right. He could end up turning into a Pete, although he was pretty much already there. But I'm hoping that he will turn around and kind of,
Yeah.
So anyway, both of us love to hate Gabriel.
Yes.
And there was nothing in this particular episode that made me deviate from that hatred of the man. I mean, he's obviously a tormented soul, that much we knew. And it was kind of clear, you know, that he went out unarmed, I think with the intention of killing himself. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, death by walker.
And didn't have the guts to even kill himself.
Yeah, suicide by walker. Well, his self-preservation, again, another guy who has this exaggerated sense of self-preservation, I guess, in that it's not just self-preservation only, but it is selfish self-preservation, because, I mean, our group is very good at self-preserving, but they're not selfish about it. They also risk their lives to help others. Or when they're in self-preservation mode, it's not just self, it's family. And these two just have not figured that out yet, I guess. So clearly he either is a big, huge, fat coward and doesn't have the courage to let himself be killed in a horrible, gruesome way by a walker, or he just has that, his self-preservation kicks in when the thing gets too close and he just lops its head off.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you know, it was rather convenient for this walker to have a noose around its neck.
Right.
Making it kind of easy for him to kill him. But that was another example of mercy, because he did a mercy kill on that that still alive man that was, you know, partially eaten by that walker. He was alive, you could tell, and he...
Yeah, that sucked.
Mercy killed him. So I thought that was interesting, you know, for Gabriel to actually kill a human being as opposed to a walker. But at the same time, it was something that was needed. You know, the guy was obviously dead, so, you know, or about to be, and would have turned very shortly after, so... but he can't close the door. I couldn't believe it. I was sitting there when that scene happened.
Yeah.
You know, what's his name? Spencer went to him and asked for basically counseling. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Gabriel is, I'd be curious to know what Kirkman thinks of organized religion, because it's basically, if Gabriel is an example of what he thinks of organized religion, he probably doesn't think of organized religion too good, or is that the right word?
Too fondly.
too fondly. Yes.
I don't have any idea. I really hope that Father Gabriel's redemption, so-called, is real, because I don't know. He's not my favorite character. It's going to be a really long road to forgiveness for me. I'm not quick to forgive the things that he's done, because he is big fat turd face.
And what was your take on the things that he said to Sasha? I mean, was he saying those things because that's what he believed? Or was he's saying those things because he was trying to provoke Sasha in killing him.
Well, again, I think he was still talking about himself, because he says what you did to the church. I mean, it's what he did. It's how he feels about himself. And it's very clear when he starts, you know, he's crying and, what have I done? You know, they all died. I killed them. It's like, yes, the church was supposed to be a sanctuary, but you locked everyone out. And so I feel like that church was ruined a long time before they killed the termites in it. So
very true. As Maggie said in that episode, it was just four walls and a roof. And I think that was very appropriate. And I guess this is a good time to bring up Maggie when it comes to Gabriel.
Yeah.
Because,
yes.
I mean, she seems to be the one who is going to help both Gabriel and Sasha heal. I think that's how I read it. I mean, if anyone would know how to heal, it would be her, because, I mean, if you think about it, she's lost her brother, her mother in stepmother, sorry, and I think her mother too, before the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Her father, her sister or half sister. I think, were they half sisters or sisters?
Beth and Maggie.
Yeah. I got the impression that Beth was Maggie's half sister.
I think that might be right. I can't remember 100% all of her backstory. Like, I don't know what the age difference is between them. I know that Beth is like around 18 or so, you know, and Maggie is, what, she's old enough to have finished college, right? She finished college and came back to the farm.
Yeah. Yes.
So at least a 4-year difference, not unheard of for the same parents, but I don't know, like me and my half siblings, I am 11 years older than them. So, or 11 and 12 years older than them, but, I don't know. But I think that's right. I guess it would just depend on, or perhaps depend on when her mom died. You know, she died when she was really young and her dad got remarried when she was really young. Then it makes sense that they would have another child, I guess. I don't know.
I got the impression that there was a brother that was a stepbrother of Maggie's, that was a half-brother of Beth's, that was killed early on in the apocalypse prior to our group, you know, coming to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And when the events that happened in Pretty Much Dead Already with the barn and the Sophia stuff and all the walkers coming out of the barn, one of those walkers was Herschel's wife,
right,
who was Beth's mother, right?
Right.
Because Beth runs out to her, right, and almost gets killed by her,
mm-hmm,
if you recall. Mm-hmm. And that was Maggie's stepmother. So anyway, it doesn't matter here nor there. But Maggie's lost pretty much all of her family. The only one that she has left is Glenn, you know, her husband now, and the rest of the group, which has become, you know, a family by choice, as I think you mentioned in an earlier episode. But she's lost a lot. And that's something that she mentions to Deanna, that, you know, Rick has lost a lot. And, you know, we've lost a lot.
Right.
And Deanna really, I think, couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
I wanted Maggie to say, to tell Deanna of all that she's lost in that one scene. I think it would have kind of changed her mind a little bit, but that there was to get to that, I guess. So going back around, I was saying that it looks like Maggie's going to help Gabriel and Sasha get over their grief. And obviously Sasha's going through a lot right now. understandably so.
Yeah, totally. I think, though, before you go completely away from that, I think when I was watching that one particular part where Maggie is trying to talk to Deanna, I was thinking to myself, you know, it's not usually a good idea to compare, like to compare loss, you know, because it affects different people in different ways. However, I do think that in this particular situation, it seems more appropriate because the people in Alexandria, they really don't understand the way it really is out there. And they truly don't. I mean, to me, again, like I said, I think I said last week, this must be the first time that Deanna's ever really lost anyone or anything or anything like that. You know, she must not have ever experienced that before, because to her, this is, I mean, it's everything. Nothing can compare to it. But again, she does not know what it's like to basically live with that or live with that threat on a day-to-day basis. And I mean, that can really wear on a person, you know, when you're constantly in fear for your survival and she does not understand the loss. And they keep, all of the Alexandrians keep saying, you know, we've lost stuff too. I'm just like, well, yeah, but I mean, you lost like you don't have a pasta maker lost. So it's not really the same. And I just.
Yeah. Maggie could say something like, you lost.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you what I've lost.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I watched my father get
beheaded.
Beheaded by a
crazy madman who really is a bad guy.
Yeah. You know, by Michonne's katana, but not by Michonne. I watched my sister get carried out of a hospital with, you know, her head blown out, you know.
Yeah.
And I've lost all of my family, you know. So how can you say that we've lost more than you? Or vice versa.
Right.
So.
Exactly.
Okay. We were talking about Maggie. So let's stay on Maggie for a minute.
Okay.
And why? I mean, the secret's out now. We know that in the forum, of course, Deanna told everyone what Gabriel said. I thought it was quite appropriate that he wasn't there to defend it, and it was discounted by that fact.
Yeah.
But it's out there now, and our group, everyone that was there, knows what he said.
Yeah.
So why do you think she didn't say anything to anybody?
I don't have any idea. I just, again, it makes me the same way that you were mad at Maggie about not talking about her sister. I'm mad that she did not say anything to anyone, apparently, about this. I mean, I don't have any idea. She could have said it off screen, but it seems like she didn't tell anybody about this. So this is coming completely out of the left field for the rest of them. And I feel like this was a misstep on her part, because as many people are prone to say, the best offense is a good defense, and you can't have a good defense if you don't have all the facts. And I feel like this is a huge, huge important detail / fact that needs to be shared with the rest of the group so that they can arm themselves against this, because they know it's not true. They, you know, they might doubt themselves every once in a while and their actions, I guess, or what have you, but I feel like everyone who believes what he said is a fool, including and especially Deanna, because she just complete 180 from, I would really like to be a part of your family, to, well, Rick just displayed all of those characteristics last night, didn't he? You know, kind of shaking her finger sort of a thing. And I just thought to myself, you don't even know the situation, stupid. He basically, yes, okay, that situation was not handled in the best way that it could have been handled, but Pete hauled off and cold clocked Rick. So he fought back, kind of a thing. And I'm not going to justify his actions in continuing the fight, but I do understand that sometimes these things, you know, tempers get hot and these things can get blown out of control. But in the beginning, Rick was not the aggressor. And it's kind of like he, you know, he'll, if you come at me sideways, I'll straighten you out, kind of a thing. And that's exactly what Pete did. And they, it's sort of like when you come into the room at the end of a conversation and you think you know what people are talking about, but you didn't hear the whole thing, so you don't really know. That's kind of what happened. And it just made me really not like Deanna even more.
It's like I said in the last episode. And by the way, listeners, it's all my fault that it was so late. So I had a lost cat, which I found. But anyway, sorry.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay for found kitties.
Yeah. But it took 10 days of searching for him. But that adventure is now over and he's at the new place and doing quite well. But I digress. Hopefully you won't have to wait this long this episode. And if you do, I will have failed again, but in case, just wanted to say it ahead of time. Anyway, I guess we haven't really talked about the other Dick, and that's of course, Pete.
Pete.
And the first thing that I have to say, you know, and we talked about the whole, can you deny him alcohol and whatnot. And we don't know if that's the source of his issues, but I don't think he deserved to have the alcohol, regardless of whether or not it was the source of his issues. The guy, he totally lost me at the point when Carol, you know, threatened him and he didn't want to go treat Tara.
Yeah.
That is a violation of the Hippocratic Oath. And that tells me that not only is he a bad person, he's a bad doctor and he's despicable. He's just a terrible human being. Far beyond what I think I realized. He's just not a good guy at all.
Right.
So.
I was thinking to myself, you know, it's super clear that these people have way too much to eat and have no idea what it's like to be hungry the way that they waste food.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
You know, Pete in the casserole. He just drops it on the floor like it's nothing. I'm like, are you kidding me right now?
Oh.
And last week, Deanna just leaving it outside. I just, again, too much food that they just don't know what to do with it. They've never tried to grind up walnuts to feed a baby with the butt of a gun.
Yes. Yeah, they just, you know, I agree with you. And it's not an unlimited food supply, you know, it's wasteful. And
yeah. And I mean, we know what Aaron is saying, that we want to bring people here, but we're going to have to feed them. So he's clearly thinking that they don't have an endless supply of food, but it seems like everybody else there, you know, and I expect that from him because he has been outside more than the rest of them have seemingly. I mean, you know, he's the recruiter. So you expect him to have more knowledge of how things are outside and that you can't just run to the store real quick, you know, and pick up some whatever, casserole fixins. And you've got Susie Q, whatever her name is, with the chocolate monitoring and all that kind of stuff. So she's clearly understanding about food. But the rest of them, I'm like, you're just wasting it. I don't know. I just, again, they are like children.
I thought that was very interesting what Carol said as well.
Yes, I thought that was spot on.
Children like stories.
Yes, they do. It's true.
Can you tell me a story? Once upon a time, there was a walker. Anyway.
Oh, that's funny.
But, yeah, and again, we've talked about the Alexandrians and how they're just not equipped and they're not ready. And of course, Rick says this later, but you know, Pete's able to just grab Michonne's katana, you know, like they don't lock their doors even.
Well, maybe they don't have keys, but again, in a really small, supposedly tight-knit community like that, you wouldn't expect that to be necessary. But Pete is violating many, many social laws. The whole idea of, I mean, if you, okay, so I took, I can't remember if it was an intro to ethics class or some kind of philosophy class, and that where they talked about things like language and communication and speech, and how the only reason that these things work is because people expect honesty. Otherwise, there's no reason to communicate, because if you can't believe anything that anyone ever says, there's no reason to ever talk ever, which is true. Because if I cannot expect, if I can't reasonably expect that the things that you're telling me are the truth, then I have no reason to communicate with you. Same thing with personal property. If I cannot reasonably expect that the things that I am saying are mine and that I own are that is going to be respected, then there's no such thing as personal property. These are social constructs that we create. We create the idea of personal property and communication and all that kind of stuff because of our interactions and the way that we live in societies. And so if you cannot, he broke the don't beat your wife one. And then he also broke the personal property one. He goes into someone else's house and takes their sword. I mean, everyone knows that that's hers, or at least they should, because she came in with it. You know, and she wore it around for a little while. She wore it at the cocktail party. So anyway, he's just screwing up left and right.
Yeah. Yeah. He just, so many things to say about the guy. And I'm glad he's dead.
So many things. Many words.
So many things. I mean, they're really, other than the fact that he was a doctor, I can't think of a positive thing to say. Oh, okay. He's tall. I wish I was that tall. I'm only 5'7", and I wish it was that tall. But, you know, I would rather be a nice person and 5'7" than a jerk and 6'5", or whatever the heck he is.
Jerk face.
Yeah.
Well, he's super tall.
Yes. Okay, so I want to talk about next. Gone around various things. But one of the parts where I think the episode lost a few tenths of a point for me was there was a bit of another plot contrivance, I thought. And that had to do with Rick going after those walkers that were inside the walls. I didn't buy it in a lot of ways. I didn't have a huge problem with it. I thought that it paid off in the end, but I couldn't help but, you know, look at that on first watch and say to myself, you know, wouldn't Rick like call for backup and, you know, call for Michonne, call for Abraham, what have you, to help find these walkers and get rid of them? I would think that he wouldn't be going at this alone. So the fact that he went and searched for these walkers alone, conveniently making him not available to the forum, was a bit of a plot contrivance. And I didn't take that as something that was in his character. He wouldn't be that stupid to do something like that. Yes, capable of getting those walkers. That's not a question. But Rick knows that he's going to be much more efficient, you know, getting his people to help him find the walkers that have crossed. Because at that time, he doesn't know how many walkers got through. There could have been 20, for that matter.
Right.
So I had a somewhat of a problem, not a huge problem, but somewhat of a problem with. And I'll say, you know, I said that A was a better episode, and as a Beside the Dying Fire, and they're close, but I think there was a lot more peril in A, and the cliffhanger, of course, you know, an episode, I think in many ways, I don't know about you, Ruthie, but that episode pushed me to start this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say if we were, you know, starting this podcast a year later and this was the season finale that we were, you know, going on, I don't think it would have pushed me to the level of A. Like I wanted this season to start, and you know, so that's why I say that wasn't as good. But I totally go off on a tangent there, but it was just, I guess it was something about this particular point that made me think of A especially.
Yeah.
So
I guess I would say the only thing that I could say in response to that is that maybe he thought there were only one or two or something. But again, you're right. There could have been 20 or something. And I don't know why he didn't go get backup. I feel like sometimes with the show, they have problems coming up with story organically. And I think about another show that I watched that is actually really, really good. It's kind of slow moving sometimes, but it's very, very, very character driven and very much like they don't think about what they want to have the characters do, like what kind of things they want to happen or what action they think should take place. They really focus on the characters and how would the character, like, what would happen with this character? How would this character do XYZ or whatever, instead of having something, I don't know, instead of like reverse engineering something, they talk about and think about how would the character do this? And if that is out of character for that person, then we won't have them do it just because, you know, they won't do it just even though that they really want to. That's not a good enough reason. Just because we want to have them do XYZ is not a reason to have them do that in the show. And
that show is?
I was about to say that show is The Americans. And it's very interesting because you find yourself rooting for the Russians sometimes. And it feels like I feel a little, I guess,
unpatriotic?
Yes, I feel a little, I was going to say unfaithful or whatever. I feel a little unpatriotic when I'm watching this show because I'm rooting for these people who are spies and enemies, you know, and enemies of the state kind of a thing. But it's a really good show. And there's this, I don't know what it is. It's a podcast with the, I guess the TV writers, producers, whatever. And they talk about that sometimes. And they did talk about that. And I realized as I was listening to them talk about that, that it's so true. They really don't, like, you don't see these people ever really doing things that are just, whoa, completely off base. And where did that come from? Kind of out of left field for the character. And I think it's because they have their stories. They progress and move forward naturally and organically, whereas that doesn't really seem to happen as much with The Walking Dead. Not that I don't like it.
All of the time. It happens sometimes.
Right. But sometimes it does happen. It's not that I am trying to bash the show or anything like that. I do really like it a lot. Obviously, I wouldn't be doing this, but it's just sometimes I really get frustrated and I know I'm probably going to get hate mail for this, but I wonder if that is because of the source material, honestly. I don't know if the problem is systemic or if it's something else. I don't know, but
I know who might have some feedback on that. Ryan, I'm talking to you. Send some feedback in.
That's fine. I honestly don't have any idea because, as I've said numerous times, I've never read the comics. I just wonder about that. So,
yeah. And just to follow up on what you said, another example, another show that I think does this or did this to a T was Breaking Bad. And the character of Walter White and the Gus Fring and all the other characters in the show that were very prominent in the show, the things that they did and the plot, you know, the story was moved forward in character, I think. And that was true right to the end. And I don't know if I've said it on this podcast, but I think that the last 8 episodes of Breaking Bad were probably the best 8 episodes, 8 consecutive episodes of any show ever, including The Walking Dead. Probably, I think it's safe to say that there is one of the episodes in there that I can give a 10. Not a 9.9999999, a 10. And that's Ozymandias, if that was incredible. So, yeah, that Ruthie, if you, I know we've talked about this before, but that's a show that you should pick up. You really should. It's great. But anyway, so let's talk about the wolves.
Okay.
So we talked about them a little bit last episode, and I think a lot of what we talked about with those guys seems to be true. There is some psychotic behavior there, some detachment from reality. And these guys are like, there's some serious serial killer type behavior there, and also brilliant behavior, but they're very scary.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you make of the fact that he had no ammo?
I'm not sure. I guess maybe he expected, I don't know, maybe they're used to dealing with a certain type of person who is typically very, what's the right word? Very cowed, I guess, in the face of a gun pointing at them. And maybe he didn't think it was necessary because he knew what's his face or his partner in crime was hiding in the bushes to attack.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought, oh, well, that's interesting when he went to shoot the walker and he couldn't. I just thought, well, that's all right then.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Well, I have to think that these are only two of the many wolves. There have to be more.
You think?
It has to be some kind of, cult. Mm. I mean, I can't see two guys being able to wreak this much havoc. Yeah, I guess it's possible, but
yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I found myself wondering, is it just those two guys?
Yeah.
Because I mean, those are the only two that we see the whole episode. And then I was wondering, are those the two guys that Deanna banished from Alexandria? I don't know. I haven't given up on that.
Yeah, that's a question that I thought about as well. And in the stinger, of course, we see the one guy looking at the photos that were in the knapsack of Aaron, which I didn't realize until second watch.
That wasn't the stinger. That was just right before the credits. The stinger was Michonne not putting up or taking the sword back.
I thought that the stinger had two things in it. That's what I saw. I saw that the stinger had Michonne putting the sword back, and then we saw the guy from the wolves looking through the pictures of Aaron's.
I did not actually watch to the stinger the second time I watched it because I forgot, honestly, and I saw the guy with the pictures. So.
Okay.
I would say that happened before the credits then, because I didn't watch after the credits this time.
Well, I will also say that I think that the leader, or one of the members at least, of the Wolves is Rube Goldberg, or maybe Kevin from Home Alone. because of the elaborate because of the elaborate design of the trap that they created, you know, and stored all these walkers in these trucks. And
yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, speaking of that, I don't know if it was just blatantly obvious that it was a trap because I'm a viewer, or if they should have known that too. Because to me, I'm like, it just screams trap.
It's a trap.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think they were a little silly going through that. And yeah, it looks like you're right.
I know I'm right.
Yeah. Yeah. I just pulled it up, and yeah, there he was looking through the pictures before the stinger. Although I thought I saw him looking at the pictures again during the stinger, but anyway, I tend to think that we're not going to see them again until a couple of episodes in, you know, maybe episode 2 or episode 3 of season 6. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I kind of feel like they sort of set this up to lead directly into them coming and being attacked. I don't know that it will necessarily directly follow the events of this evening, or if it will be one of those 6 months later kind of things, you know, because I don't know if they will. I mean, all they had were pictures. So on the one hand, if those are the two guys that were exiled, then they know exactly where that is. If they're not, then I don't know how quickly they would be able to find Alexandria, or if they would just know where that is. You know, I mean, it's without new roadmaps or signs or that kind of thing, you know, or without something saying, like, I don't think anybody took a picture of a sign that said, "This is Alexandria," you know, kind of a thing. Cause it was sort of that little neighborhood or whatever was kind of started before the zombie apocalypse, because that's what Deanna said. They set it up to be this way or whatever. And, so it might have appeared on a map, but again, you would have to find a really current or recently printed map right before the zombie apocalypse, and you would have to have a picture of a sign to know exactly where it is or how to find it. So long story short, or short story long, I don't know that they would be able to find that immediately. So I think it's probably more likely that they'll do a span of time has passed sort of a thing to keep up with our growing child actors. And it'll be some time has passed, but I kind of feel like they're going to see them in the next episode, because it's going to be, I think Rick is going to be fortifying and training and all that stuff. And then they will get attacked. And I guess we will see how well the defenses and fortifications work. I really thought that was going to happen this episode. I thought that they were going to get attacked and that Rick was going to save the day, and so that everybody would be like, oh, well, I guess we were wrong. We really do need Rick Grimes.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
I don't think they needed to go into them too much. I think there's enough there based on what they showed us.
Yeah. I think this episode was sort of a setup episode, I guess, kind of.
Yeah. I think it was set up for season 6, you know, and they will probably follow the same kind of pattern that they have done in the past, which is, you know, that pretty much every 8 episodes, every half season is another.
It's a change. They said that.
Change. Yeah.
He said that. He basically just said as much on, I guess it was Talking Dead, something about every 8 episodes, they just completely change what's going on.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the adventure that Daryl and Aaron had.
Yeah.
But what did you, beyond that, what did you think of the whole car scene?
I really liked it, honestly. I feel like it's it's very much in character for Daryl to do, you know, he's clearly prepared to sacrifice himself for Aaron. And I feel like that is in character for him.
I agree.
He knew he wasn't going to make it, but he pretty much told Aaron, hey, I'll distract him. You make a break for it, kind of a thing. But my thought or my question kind of was, would they have made it had they not had help?
It's a good question.
I think their plan of going out, like not going out the same.
Guns a-blazing.
Sorry?
Guns a-blazing.
Oh,
sort of.
Well, knives shining, I guess. I don't know. I think
there you go.
They were.
I didn't mean literally guns a-blazing.
Well, I mean, going out on opposite sides of the car was what I was going to say. Did not seem like a very good plan to me, because as they have shown in, you know, numerous episodes and several seasons, I guess it was at the beginning of season 3 or whatever, when they had developed their little, I guess, diamond formation, what have you, with the...
Yeah, I want to see that formation again.
Yeah, and I was like, well, that's a bad idea and destined to fail with them getting out on opposite sides of the car. Why didn't Daryl like get into the back seat and go out that door with him or something, or just pile out after him out of the same door or something, or like move around in the car so that Daryl goes out first and then Aaron is right back. I don't know. I just thought they should at least be going out on the same side of the car, if not the same door. Or out the same door, if not the same side, or whatever, you know. I thought, opposite doors, really? And it...
Well, it was kind of a small car.
Well, yeah, so. But you can still... I mean, Daryl can move into the back seat. Aaron could move over into the driver's seat. Then Daryl could move back into the passenger seat and bust out of the door and have Aaron follow him, like, directly follow him, because Daryl's clearly the stronger fighter, I guess, so he should be the one to lead. But I just, opposite sides of the car, I thought that is a recipe for disaster. And I mean, I couldn't tell if the car was a 4-door or a 2-door. And if it was a 4-door, then Daryl should have just gotten in the back seat and busted out the same way or the same side. Anyway, I don't know. I just thought, and you know, Aaron's side was the one that was closer to the gate, I guess. So still, I just was kind of like, what the heck?
I'd have to look. I don't know if it was a 2-door versus 4-door. It makes what you're proposing makes more sense if it were a 4-door. I think if it were a 2-door, given the fact it was a fairly small 2-door, you know, these days pretty much all cars in the front seat have that console in between the two seats. So makes it a little harder to jump over. So if it was a 4-door, yeah, I can see it. If it was a 2-door, it'd be a little more difficult than, and they wouldn't be able to synchronize when they went out, so to speak. But
maybe, but I mean, still, if you're not worried about driving, then you can position yourself in such a way that you can be prepared to jump out right after someone else.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I guess a couple of things I wanted to say. First of all, I didn't realize until I heard it on another podcast, I guess. And then on second watch, I saw when it happened. I did not realize at the time that Aaron left his bag. So I guess originally when I saw the leader of the wolves, looking at the pictures, I thought he was looking at the pictures that he had, like that, you know, that would show that he was one of those castouts. So I kind of missed that on first thing, but the other thing I was going to say is I'm really liking Aaron a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic of him to say that, you know, we do this together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that character a lot. I thought he was a bit awkward in that first episode with him, but since then, Yeah, I've really grown to like him a lot, and is teaming up with Daryl. I think they are a great team.
Yeah, he's definitely grown on me.
Yeah. Kind of bounced around a lot, but I guess this is a good time, since we were talking about the Wolves and talking about Daryl and Aaron, that we bounce back to Morgan, because, of course, Morgan saves them.
Yes.
And Daryl asks why, and his response is, all life is precious, which, yes, I guess explains why he didn't kill the Wolves before. Although, honestly, I thought that's what he was trying to do when he honked the horn.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah. But I guess that wasn't his objective. Maybe his objective was to clear. Maybe he's still doing that.
Yeah. Well, I think, I can't remember, but it seems like Lenny James said it in Talking Dead that he honked the horn to basically see if there were any other walkers in the area, because the horn would draw them over and he could take them out, and so that he could leave those guys and that they would be safe. But none others showed up. So he, you know, they were, it was safe for him to leave, I guess.
So Daryl asked why, you know, why did Morgan come to their rescue? And his answer was that all life is precious.
Yes.
And this was punctuated when later on, when they get to Alexandria, and the very first thing that Morgan sees, or at least from our perspective that he sees, is Rick kill Pete.
Yeah. Oops.
So do you see a clash coming between those two?
I'm not sure, but I feel like, based on the experiences this episode and the things that we've seen Morgan say and do, to me, I feel like he is kind of like that really good, pure person that you don't want to cuss in front of, I guess. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So he's, or, you know, do any kind of bad behavior, I guess, in front of. And I kind of feel like he's...
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like he's that person. And so you don't want to do or say bad things in front of them. And he might not know exactly what was going on, but he just, you don't want to disappoint him. You don't want him to see your bad side, I guess. And so I kind of like, I don't want Morgan to see Rick execute that guy, but he did. So it's kind of, I don't know. I'm concerned about what Morgan thinks. I'm like, ooh, is that going to be okay with Morgan? You know, and I'm not.
Why?
I don't really know why, honestly, other than that, like that explanation about that, you know, person that you don't want to do bad things in front of kind of makes me feel like I don't want them to do that in front of him, you know, because he has, I mean, they kind of started off in the same place, I guess, not just physically, but metaphorically, Rick and Morgan. And
yeah,
they have evolved into not exactly polar opposites, but not like very different people, very different ideas. And like you say, philosophies. So I just wonder, you know, will they still want to be friends? Will they still have fond feelings for each other, I guess, you know? I mean, I don't know. I'm concerned, because I don't want, I'm like, no, Morgan, don't leave.
Well, something that Lenny James said in on Talking Dead, where he said that there was an experience that Morgan had somewhere along, you know, that changed him. Something that we don't know about, you know, because clearly, like, the last time we saw Morgan, he was out there, you know, he was pretty close to insanity. And now he seems to be totally together, but,
right,
you know, it's clear that No pun intended, by the way.
All right, get it? Clear?
It seems clear to me that, you know, he hasn't come across any cannibals or, you know, people like the governor, I guess. Well, maybe he has, I don't know, but has dealt with them in a different way. I don't know, but, and that's a question by itself. It's like, how would Morgan have dealt with, Terminus? What if Morgan had been Carol, you know?
Yeah.
rescuing the group, you know, what would he have done? It's quite, hadn't thought of it until the moment I said it, but
yeah,
it's interesting to think, to wonder, to me, as far as what I see, there is a definite, clash of philosophies there. And, cause you know, Rick says something about, I think, you know, we control, it was last episode. He said, you know, we can control who lives here or something.
Right.
And that's implied that, you know, we would kill those that don't deserve, I guess. And, clearly Morgan would have a problem with that. And so I see some kind of clash coming.
I kind of hope that it won't really be a clash necessarily so much as a, like Morgan
drama.
Well, no, that's
conflict.
No, again, not what I was going to say.
Sorry.
More like Morgan will kind of help Rick, I guess. I hope that it will be more along the lines of Morgan helping Rick come back from Crazy Town, kind of the way that I think, anyway, that Rick helped Morgan. I think that Rick helped Morgan come out of his Crazy Town in Clear. That's my thought, anyway, is that that's the reason why Morgan is okay now, is because Rick helped him kind of through that. But that's what I think. I hope.
Yeah. I think that that is very possible. And if that means that Morgan becomes the moral compass, does that mean that we're eventually going to lose another black male character?
Gosh, I hope not.
I don't know. I hope that Lenny James becomes a series regular. He's a phenomenal actor.
Yes.
I've loved him. I guess since Jericho, I don't know if I really knew him before that, but, you know, Jericho and of course, you know, the pilot, but you know, he's so good. I actually watched, about half of Low Winter Sun before I finally gave up on it. And it was because of Lenny James.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff that I've really liked. Probably the first thing that I saw him in was, oh man, maybe it was, gosh, I can't remember. I can't remember if it was a movie or if it was
probably a British movie.
No, There, honestly, it was a, I know he's been in a couple of TV shows too, but I mean, he's played bad guys in the stuff that I saw and I really liked him too. I was like, man, he's so awesome. And then when I saw him, you know, like 5 years ago in The Walking Dead, I was like, holy crap, that's that guy and blah, blah, and the rest is history. But now I can't remember what I was thinking of when I said, that's that guy. So, you know. Anyway, yeah, I love him too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, hopefully we'll get to see him. And I have a thought about that we'll leave till near the end, but, just add a couple more things. Glenn, we talked about him and the whole fight with, Tool. I mean, Nicholas, ridiculous. Anyway, but I thought he was going to die there when two walkers were on him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and it seemed to like go straight from that to Nicholas getting jumped by Glenn. I don't know. Maybe I missed that scene. I don't know. Did I miss that scene? Was there something that showed him actually fight off those two walkers? I didn't see it.
No, there was no scene showing him fighting off walkers. It was just
good.
I
didn't think so.
He gets dogpiled by the walkers, and then the next scene is him flying out of nowhere and beating the crap out of, the next scene for him anyway was him beating the crap out of Nicholas. I personally thought he was a goner when he told Maggie, "I love you." I was like, "Oh crap."
Yeah.
Glenn's gonna die.
Yeah. I thought that as well, you know, just anyway. But this brings me to one of my predictions from last week. I thought I had figured it out. I thought I came up with this grand idea that no one else had figured out, that, you know, episode 11 in the distance, we saw this RV that looked just like Dale's RV. And then we have those five episodes after it. Remember, forget, spend, try, and conquer, which were all from Dale's speech. And I figured that Glenn was either going to die or come close to death, and in that see some kind of flashback or vision of Dale. And of course, we didn't see Dale in this episode. So I was completely wrong.
Yeah, well, can't win them all.
I thought it was a brilliant idea, but of course, didn't pay off. So anyway, just wanted to say I was wrong. The last thing, because we kind of, I don't know, skipped around the whole Pete and then Rick thing, but we didn't really talk about Deanna's about face, I guess. So when Pete accidentally kills Reg with a katana, shouldn't be pointing a katana around Pete. You know, you're a surgeon. You should know about sharp instruments.
Right. What to do with the pointy end.
Yeah. Yeah. But Dr. Tool kills Reg, and Deanna turns around and tells Rick, do it.
Right.
What'd you think about that?
Do it now.
Do it.
Do it now. I don't know.
It's not a tumor.
Exactly. Do it now. Sorry. I can't stop. It's like a tick.
I'll be back.
Get to the chopper. Okay. Last one. I don't know. I was thinking to myself, I feel like she had already made up her mind. She said, oh, we're going to talk about it, but she'd already made up her mind. Like, why go through the pretense? You've already made up your mind. Why don't you just skip straight to the, you know, we're going to kick him out thing? And I was wondering, would Reg have been able to persuade her in the opposite vein that she was already thinking, or, you know, had he lived or not, I guess, really. But I kind of feel like, I honestly kind of lost a little bit of respect for her, because as you may recall from my sign off, she said, we're not executing people. Don't ever ask me again. And
yeah,
like, wow, way to stick to your morals there.
Until my hubby gets killed.
Exactly. Way to stand by your convictions. So we won't ever execute people. Don't ever ask me again, unless it's convenient for me or unless it's something that I want, was kind of the thing I got for at the end of that. So I was like, really, Deanna, and
spoken like a true congressman.
Yeah. And you know, I feel like she's kind of starting to learn what real loss is like. You know, she's now lost two people very close to her in as many days, almost, I guess. And so I think she's probably feeling really stupid for all the things that she said to Maggie about how, you know, yes, we do know what loss, we know what loss is. You know, we can't have our comfy electricity. Anyway, just, you know, now I think she's sort of starting to get it, if you will. So
we've had our share of losses. Mrs. Niedermeyer hasn't been able to have a pasta maker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But again, I just want, you know, how quickly the tide changes with going straight from we won't ever execute anyone ever to do it.
Well, I never really gave my opinion on it, but I wasn't terribly surprised that she would do it. I think she kind of needed an example to change her mind, although it was kind of sudden how it all went down.
Yeah.
You know, do it and literally, you know.
Yeah, cry face and Rick do it. Yeah.
It was about 2 seconds that went between, you know, but. Yeah. So I guess Alexandria has an opening now for a doctor.
Yeah.
But.
And a first gentleman or whatever.
Yes. let's move on, though. Survivor of the week. I gave my survivor of the week to Morgan for obvious reasons, I think. It's good to see him again. And I just loved his ninja moves. They have a samurai now and a ninja.
Right.
What about you?
My survivor of the week was Glenn, because not only did he get shot, but he got Walker dogpiled and somehow managed to come out of it alive enough to beat the crap out of Nicholas and make him cry like a little crybaby.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Death of the week. There's actually, this is more like deaths of the week because there were multiple deaths. And I couldn't agree on any single one of them. So,
right.
But what did you want to start with?
Well, I just,
'cause you had a good one.
I just picked the hand through the brain zombie, 'cause that's what it seemed like he did. It seemed like he basically just pushed up until he reached the brain and then went squish.
Well, was it that, or was it a gun that he had?
It
must have been his hand. I don't know, but it was so gross.
Yeah, it was not a gun, especially when it like gushed all over him. I was like, ew.
Yeah, it basically exploded.
Yeah.
It was so gross, but yeah.
Try to plug your nose without your hands. Ugh.
Yeah. It was, I think they called it on Talking Dead, freshly squeezed zombie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that another kill that was really cool was Daryl's chain killer.
Yeah.
You know, him taking that big chain and literally, you know, cutting the heads of three walkers, you know, with one swoop.
Right.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I must outline, as far as humans, you know, people that were not yet deceased. It was good to see Pete dead.
Yeah.
By the end of that episode. I mean, he's the, again, a despicable person. Really just a terrible person, the worst doctor. You know, we have like the worst doctor, the worst minister,
right?
the worst congressman.
Like, you'd be better off without them.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we didn't actually see Pete, you know, actually get killed on camera. I saw or listened to one podcast that they thought that Rick could have maybe shot Reg. But that's not that. There's no way that that's
why
true.
Why would they think
it
that?
It was Pete. Yeah.
I don't know why anybody would think that.
Yeah. I thought that was just, no, definitely not. I have to give an honorable mention to Reg, though. I was sorry to see him go. I thought I liked the guy.
I agree.
He at least saw Rick for what he was.
Right.
And he didn't deserve to die the way that he did.
No.
Especially at the hands of Dr. Jerk.
I was sad that Gabriel didn't die, but I was really glad that Sasha didn't kill him.
Yeah, we kind of glanced over that. And that's actually, I guess is a good point to bring up in the death of the week. What did you make of Sasha's bed of walkers?
I don't know. I don't really know what to think about that.
I guess she could see herself wanting to die, but I didn't completely understand. You know, she kills all these walkers. She builds digs a mass grave for them and then lays in it.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Cuckoo.
Yeah. And I guess that's why she comes to Gabriel saying that she's losing her mind.
Right.
Because that does sound like she's, or did look like she was losing her mind there. But
yep.
Anyway, do we have any death predictions, I guess, for season 6?
I don't really.
Yeah, I think it's too soon. I need to process a little bit. I can say with conviction that there will be some deaths in season 6.
Yeah.
Who they'll certainty. Be, I don't know.
Yeah.
That was a really way out there prediction. You know, I'm saying that there will be deaths. Anyway. Okay. So, feedback.
Yay. We got some.
Yeah. We got some feedback this week, and we actually got it from someone new, Sarah. So let's go ahead and play that back, shall we?
Let's do it.
Hi, Brian and Ruthie. This is Sarah from Bakersfield, California. This is my first time watching a finale live, and the suspense is definitely higher when you don't already know who's going to die. I was cowering in my sweater for much of the last third of the episode. I thought it was a tad anticlimactic, but I was very happy not to see any of our core group die. Now for my thoughts on each character. Father Gabriel. I hate him, I hate him, I hate him, I hate him, I hate him. I think the breakdown at the end of the episode shows that Ruthie was right, that the rant he made to Deanna about the rest of the group really was about himself. Is it supposed to make us more sympathetic to him now? I've never really liked him, and I don't expect that to change. But maybe now that he's made a confession, the guilt will be off of his conscience and he can move forward without being a jerk, or at least as big of a jerk. Morgan. I was so happy to see him at the beginning of the episode. I can't wait to hear more about his story and see how he fits in with our group. And his timing could not have been better. I think the Glenn-Nicholas interaction was a good counter to the Rick-Pete situation. Nicholas went out into the woods to kill Glenn, and Glenn had the chance to kill him, but he didn't. We see them at the end of the episode arm in arm helping each other back to Alexandria. I'm sure they'll never be friends, but Glenn sees the value in the living. Someone mentioned a few weeks ago that Rick was on Shane's arc. Is Glenn the new Rick? Compare Glenn and Nicholas to Rick and Pete. Their relationship started rocky and went downhill from there, basically over a girl. Don't get me wrong, Pete was a class A jerk, but I don't think Rick should have killed him just based on Deanna's little nod. Pete had just killed her husband, so I don't think she was in the best mindset to be making life or death decisions. I also think it will throw some kinks into Rick's potential relationship with Jesse. I'd like to say that Rick will end up regretting killing Pete, but I'm not sure he will. Carol. Is it just me, or is she laying it on a little too thick? Maybe it's just because I know she's lying, but I felt like she was coming across as more creepy than comforting in her arguments to the Alexandrians. I'm worried about her, and for her, and I hope Rick stops letting her into his head. Maggie. She's one of the two voices of reason we have left, along with Michonne. I hope they give her more to do next season. Maybe she's what will keep Glenn from continuing on Rick's arc, assuming she stays alive. Speaking of Michonne, I never really saw the Richonne ship before I started listening to you guys, but I definitely felt some of it this episode. I was very happy to see her get her sword off of the wall. I don't know why she took it off in the first place, and it will probably come in handy next season with the wolves on the prowl. So, my rating for this episode is 9.5 swords off the wall. Thanks a lot, guys.
And thank you, Sarah. That was totally awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. That was, and I must say, you have a very nice microphone there.
Yes.
I don't know if that was your microphone or your phone that you used, but you sounded great on it.
Yeah.
Did you have anything that you wanted to say about Sarah's comments?
I completely agree with what she was saying about the Glenn Nicholas dynamic and the Rick Pete dynamic, and that I think that I agree with her about the killing Pete might cause problems in the future with Jesse. I think so too, honestly. I don't think that Jesse will, I mean, it's going to be a hard thing for her, I think, honestly, because on the one hand, yes, that guy was abusive and a jerk, but on the other hand, he was her husband and the father of her children. So you're definitely going to have mixed feelings when you look at the person who killed him. So I don't know. I don't really foresee any kind of future for them, honestly. I don't really know what the writers are thinking, but I'm not much of a shipper, but I do prefer Rick and Michonne to Jesse and Michonne. Or Jesse and Rick. Gosh.
Jesse and Michonne.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny there. But I thought her comments about Creepy Carol were, I do have the same kind of thoughts, because eventually they will figure out what Carol is.
Yeah. Like when they get attacked.
Yeah.
She whips out that big gun.
Yeah. and what is that, you know, how is that going to affect things? I don't know, but eventually Carol is going to have to come clean, or will be discovered for, you know,
be outed
the warrior that she is. And
right.
I don't know how that's going to affect her going forward.
Yeah, I guess it'll depend on how it is revealed. If the Alexandrians are like, all right, we're on board, we'll let you shape us, grasshopper, whatever thing, you know, mold us into how we need to be, then Carol might be like, all right, first thing you need to know is subterfuge.
Yeah.
Because I'm really a badass. I don't know.
Yeah. Her comments about Maggie, I have to agree. I hope that we do see more of Maggie next season.
Yeah.
Because I hope she will stop this. I'm not going to talk about the things that I should be talking about thing that she's been doing this season.
Right.
And part of last season. I still don't understand why she didn't mention anything about Gabriel. I still, you know, we talked about it already, but I still don't get it.
I don't either.
So, and maybe someone out there can help me out. But, and as far as Gabriel, to you, to the response to that, I have to say, I hate him. 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 So I totally agree with you there, Sarah. I do hope that, as I said a few episodes back, there, I think it was in our supplement, that there's not a character that I've ever had in any show ever that wasn't a villain that I've hated more than this guy. And I don't want to hate Gabriel. I want to tolerate Gabriel, even like Gabriel. I want to stop hating him. So hopefully he'll get there. But there's a long, like you said earlier, he has a long road to travel before he'll get in my good books. I'm thinking of what you said in episode 16 and the supplement too, about you know, everything that he said to Deanna, he was actually referring to himself.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, so if you have feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And you can use, like Sarah did, the SpeakPipe widget, which, you know, and there's also, I believe, an iPhone app for that, or, you can actually use it on your Android phone if you go to the website. I don't think that there is a SpeakPipe app for Android yet. But you can submit written feedback, of course, and you can also upload an audio file. And well, our deadline for submitting has been 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode is aired. But guess what? There's no episodes airing until October. So, but anyway, I know we had one or two people on the Facebook group ask us if we were going to do a feedback show. And I guess that depends on you guys.
Yeah.
If you send us enough feedback, maybe we will.
Right.
We will certainly do some more episodes, you know, in between. I know that probably be doing second half kind of wrap up and, you know, season 5 wrap up show some point pretty soon, although we haven't scheduled it yet. But if you have feedback for us, get it to us and we will play it on the next episode.
Yes.
Yes. So if you want to submit an iTunes review, you know, find us on iTunes and just do a search for The Walking Dead Talk Through. We're actually, you can find us if you just search for Walking Dead, The Walking Dead, under podcasts, of course. But you can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes, which brings you to a page with all of the Golden Spiral Media podcasts. And you can click on us and, you know, rate us. You know, and for that matter, we always talk about writing a review, but you know, if you don't want to write a review, certainly a rating will be appreciated as well. And I've been saying this a lot, but if you're not in the United States, if you can like drop us just a comment or something, feedback, just to let us know that you've submitted a review, we can get the review. But it's a little more difficult and it takes forever to search through. So if we know, if you're in Canada and I'm looking at you, fellow Canadians, if you want to submit a review, just like I say, tell us you submitted a review and then we'll be able to find it. And look, I do occasionally look without being told, but anyway, connect with us.
Yes, if you want to get in touch with us, then go to walkingdeadtalkthrough.com to find out how you can through our social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter mainly, although lately it's been more Facebook than Twitter, but we love interacting with you guys. It's nice, and it's going to be nice to be able to interact with you guys during the long haul when we are waiting until October, although we will have at least something to talk about, if not to podcast about, when we get the Fear of the Walking Dead. I don't know how many of you are planning on checking that show out, but I know I'm at least checking it out. So, yeah, pretty cool.
I should say that, you know, whether we podcast about Fear of the Walking Dead or not is up in the air, but if you want it, post about it on the Facebook group, post on it on the Golden Spiral Media page, say that you want a podcast on it. And if for some reason Ruthie and I don't, or one of us doesn't, I'm sure that the many hosts of Golden Spiral Media, someone will do a podcast if there's demand for it. So, and I will say, I mentioned that my tweet deck wasn't working. I got it working this week. So that's good. Do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I don't.
It's going to be another long wait. I will spend some of that time watching another favorite show of mine, Orphan Black, which is coming back in a few weeks.
Yes.
I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. That may shock some of you. Part of it is the fact that I've only had HBO for 3 months out of like forever and not currently. So I don't currently watch it. I've only seen season 1, But the other show we've mentioned a few times on here, Falling Skies, and also both of us watched The Last Ship. So we'll be watching those things. And then, of course, the prequel or whatever you want to call it, which is coming out in August. So, of course, we don't know who is going to write, direct, or what the title or description of the season 6 premiere is. That should go without saying.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Ruthie saying it's going to be a long 6 months.
And I'm Brian saying, welcome to Alexandria, Morgan. And there was something I wanted to say about you, but it's going to have to wait.
And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through.
Good night, everybody.
You say it. I was waiting for you. I was like, is he going to say it? Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.